Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, I didn't know we were talking today. I should have wrote that down.
I told you.
Oh, I know, but I zoned out, man. You should have told me before the break. That's okay. I love this guy, and he's phoned the program right now. Dr. Yeah. Ian K. Smith with us.
I had my schedule confused as well.
No, I wrote it down right. I just didn't look at it.
I wrote it down wrong.
But I'm glad we're talking to him now.
It's The Ancient Nine. It's a novel, and the author is our buddy Ian K. Smith.
Hey, Doc.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How you been?
Good. Just, you know, traveling and moving around and trying to talk about this new book, but I'm doing well.
Now, writing a book about health and chapters about health and how to stay in shape and how to eat right, blah, 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 is a whole different thing than writing a fiction novel. Did you always know you had a fiction novel in you?
Well, what a lot of people don't know is that I am a huge fiction reader and fiction writer. It's just that I've been publishing these diet and health books for so long, and they've been so successful, thankfully, by the way.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to. I wrote a novel back in 2004, which is a murder mystery. I love the genre of thrillers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been itching to write this book. This book I actually started writing in college, so it's 25-plus years in the making.
Man.
And it's about my experiences in one of the elite secret societies at Harvard. And so this is a totally different book. It's a complete departure from what people know me as, Dr. Ian. But it's a great ride. It's a great book. It's fun, and it's all based on real events, actually.
So you
I've always contended that you know, there is no real fiction out there. Guys don't just pull anything out of the air. These are based on real things, so I'm glad you set that up for us.
But did were you involved in one of those societies we know about, like, you know, with the skulls, with the Yale? Is it something like that?
Yes, except our societies at Harvard are even older.
Yes.
And they're more exclusive. So everyone knows about, you know, Yale, Skull and Bones,
right.
But our society started back in the 1700s,
mm-hmm.
And the members, you do find out who some of the members have been. For example, President Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, President Kennedy, Oliver Wendell Holmes.
You giving up any secrets by mentioning that?
I actually take you behind the walls of this very elite club called the Delphi Club, and I take you through the process. A lot of these clubs, people don't know, are... they own these huge mansions around Harvard Square and Harvard's campus. And the school doesn't own these clubs. The clubs are owned by the members and graduate members. And so the school can't really do anything to them, though they've been trying to close them and disband them. But these clubs have been around for a long time, very powerful, very wealthy people. But they have a lot of secrets inside of them. In fact, many have a lot of very valuable artifacts in them, and people have been trying to break into the clubs for years to try to see and or steal these very expensive artifacts.
Yeah, so how long ago were the clubs actually allowed black people? I mean, because someone that, you know, that was Harvard in the 1700s. Is it an old black one too, or just interracial?
No, not at all.
Okay.
So here's the deal. So back in the 1700s, right. Harvard obviously was all white male. There were no women there, no blacks, no anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about the 60s, when women started getting admitted and African Americans and other ethnic minorities, the university started trying to apply pressure to these clubs to say, listen, you have to admit these other students. You just can't keep it the way it's been for a long time. There was obviously pushback. These guys own their clubs. You can't tell them what to do with it. They have their own rights to do what they want, free association. So the university tried all types of techniques and leverages to get these clubs to open up. And what happened was the clubs did open up, so minorities did get admitted. I think the first one in my club was admitted in, like, the mid-70s. But women they never opened up to women.
Never.
And so now, however, over the last year, the university has gone to the highest level ever of pressure. They've said now anyone who's a member of one of these clubs cannot hold a student government leadership position. They can't be a captain of a varsity sporting team.
Oh, really?
And they will not get recommendations from the school when they apply for fellowships like or scholarships like the Fulbright or the Rhodes Scholar. So they're trying their best to either disband or open these clubs. So some clubs are actually contemplating admitting women. I actually believe women should be admitted. You know, just
well, explain this to me. Everybody at Harvard pretty much is pretty smart to get in there. So how exclusive do you have to be on campus to get invited to one of these clubs?
Well, you know, listen, and let me make it very clear. I don't come from a family of wealth. No. I don't come from a connected family. I come from a very working-class family.
But yeah, those are Yale guys, people.
Yeah.
Exactly. But a lot of these members are members whose families have been at Harvard for three generations.
Right.
You know, these are the families that, for example, like when I went to Harvard, I didn't know that winter could be a verb. So they winter in Florida.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, got
and,
it. Right.
And they summer elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. So these guys, and I'll never forget when I first went. So by the way, it starts with they put under your door an envelope in the middle of the night so that you can't see who's done it. And there's no postage, no return address. And you open it up and it says, like mine said way back when, the president and members of the Delta Club invite you to this cocktail party. Well, guys, let me tell you something. I grew up, you know, single mom. I didn't know what a cocktail party was when I was 18. You know what I mean? Like, what the heck? So I didn't pay any attention to this invitation. I thought it was one of these kind of dweeby campus groups inviting me to something. It wasn't until I was at basketball practice and I was changing the locker room and the older guys started talking about it was the time of the year for what they call the punch. And the punch is the name that these clubs use when they describe the period that they start inviting people to try to go through the process of joining the club. So I got punched into this club, had no idea what these clubs were, their history. Didn't know, for example, that J.P. Morgan, the J.P. Morgan Jr. of Chase, was the founder of my club, for example. I mean, it's crazy. And so, you know, these clubs have existed for a long time. They remain very exclusive. A lot of guys that go to prep schools and boarding schools have been part of these clubs. And so, like I said, I was a fish out of water. I have no idea why they would want me in their club because I'm a cool guy, I think, but I don't have all of the pedigree.
Are you still allowed to show up now after this book?
Well, it's interesting you asked that. So, you know, the book just came out yesterday.
The Ancient Nine, Dr. Ian K. Smith with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it just came out yesterday. So, you know, some members have heard about it on Facebook, and they're actually, like, excited to read it. The cover of the book is actually the front door of our club. Our club is called the Delphic, so it has this big blue door. Mm-hmm. So far the feedback has been positive, but it's early. But listen, here's my whole thing. Listen, it's a novel. It's based on three things. One, it's based on a disappearance of a student trying to break into the club in 1927. That's how the book opens.
Oh, it's old school. Okay, got it. All right.
Old school. Then it fast forwards to the 80s when I was in school.
All right.
And it talks about this kid from the other side of the tracks who's invited to join, but as he's in the process of joining, he and his friends discover that there's a group of guys called the Ancient Nine, and they're the ones who protect the secrets of this elite club.
Can you give up one of the secrets, or would that give up the book?
Let me tell you one thing in the book that happens, for example. There are there are more than two, obviously, but there are two important books, special books at Harvard. One book is the book that is the last remaining book of the John Harvard collection. He donated about 400 books. All of them got burned up in a fire except for one. And the reason why that one made it was because a student had taken it out and didn't return it to the library.
Got it.
So this is in the 1700s. So that's that one book. The other book, actually, is a book that was in the private library of King James I. And there are two missing pages of this book. And so for decades, centuries, scholars have been trying to find out where those missing pages are of that particular book. These two books, by the way, are kept under lock and key in Houghton Library, which is the rare books library at Harvard. You can see it, which I did 3 weeks ago. I went back to school to see these books to see if I could still access them. You can access them, but it's like alarmed, it's supervised, they have to be held in cradles. It's crazy stuff.
Was President Obama in one of these clubs?
Well, so President Obama was at Harvard Law School.
Oh, that's so right. That's only, right. He was an undergrad there. That's right.
He wasn't undergrad. Only undergrads can be members of these clubs. But interesting that you mentioned that is that he was actually in law school when I was undergrad.
Yeah, you mentioned
and,
it.
That's right. Yeah. So only sophomores or juniors can be punched to join the club. If you're a freshman or senior, you can't be invited to join. You have to be a sophomore or junior.
Is it everything I expect, though, when you went to these clubs? Is it a bunch of white guys talking like, well, how you doing? Is it that bad? Is it that bad?
Well, I believe they would have been,
or is it animal? Once you go through the blue door, it's an Animal House, and there's a donkey don't blow or something like
or
that.
Or is it more like Revenge of the Nerds?
Well, no, so it's a mix, actually. What was amazing was, you know, like I said, I come from a working class family. What was amazing was when I went to that cocktail party, it's the first time that I saw kids my age trying to behave like adults.
These guys were
they're smoking cigars.
Yeah.
And the conversations, like, one guy was saying, I'll never forget this, one guy was saying to another group of guys, hey, let's go down to the Bahamas for the weekend. We'll use my dad's plane. He's not using it this weekend.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what? First of all, at that time in my life, I didn't even know private planes existed. I didn't know there was such a thing as a private plane, right?
Yeah.
And this guy is saying, let's use the plane this weekend, blah, blah, blah. And another guy was saying, yeah, we're going to open up the house. Open up the house? Like what does that mean? So it was this weird kind of like situation where I just was introduced to this world where these people have vast resources. I mean, they have like homes in Newport. You know, you hear about the Newport mansion.
Yeah, I've been
sure,
to Newport.
Vanderbilts live.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, these guys, one of these guys in the club, his parents owned one of the mansions down the street from the Vanderbilts, the Breakers.
Oh, my God. I took a tour of the Breakers a couple years ago. The place is freaking amazing.
Yeah, Tyler and I are summer there.
Yeah, we summer there.
on a regular basis. Yeah.
Oh, we're lifeguards. We're lifeguards.
Yeah.
That's why.
We're lifeguards. Yeah. So anyway, this book, The Ancient Nine.
Yeah.
This book is the first book where anyone has ever written extensively about what happens behind the scenes of these clubs. No one's ever written about these, and I just felt like, listen, it's 25 years since I've done this.
Right.
Sooner or later, someone's going to talk about it. And I started writing it when I was a senior in college because I knew I wanted to share the story one day. And I finally said to my publisher, we got to publish this book for two reasons. One, someone else is going to write this book, and I've been writing this for 25 years. They're going to beat me to the punch. But two, also, I feel like with all the controversy this past year about the administration fighting the clubs again, this was a great time to release.
I hate to dwell on the racism part, but you had to face racism inside this club, did you? You had to.
Did they think you were that cool?
Well, I'm going to tell you something, and someone asked me this yesterday. I did not experience, and I'm not trying to be naive.
All right.
But for the 3 years I was in that club, I'd experienced no racism whatsoever.
All right.
No one said anything awkward. I mean, I felt very comfortable and like we were brothers. Now, that's not to say that some of the other clubs haven't done it. I can't speak for the other clubs, but I personally was very comfortable. And still, by the way, good friends with a lot of my clubmates who were members. So to me, I had a great time. It's kind of crazy, though, because you go in these clubhouses,
mm-hmm.
you know, our first floor, I say in the book, the first floor, there's this cockfight series of paintings.
Got it.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's a staff. Like, you know, we're teenagers in college, but we had a staff that cooked for us.
Man.
We had a ballroom where we had formal dinners. It's a very interesting kind of antiquated way of living that just was very unique.
It wasn't real life, obviously, but it didn't have to be because most of those people didn't have that kind of life anyway. Now, you became a famous man yourself, though. Are there other guys in that club that we would know besides yourself?
Well, you ready for this?
Yeah, so I mean, like from that era.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The guy who came in behind me.
Yeah.
Was Matt Damon.
Oh, so he actually was in that club. Okay. I could picture Matt Damon was in right after you, huh?
Yeah. So Matt and I lived in the same residence. Harvard doesn't call their places where we live. They don't call them dorms,
right.
By the way.
Yeah,
of course not.
Of course they don't. Of course they don't.
They call them houses.
Right.
I made that mistake once, okay? So Matt and I lived in the same house, not just one single house, but these houses are huge mansions, kind of blah, blah, blah. So he lived and I lived in the same house, and he actually was the group that I brought in to the club behind me, and we're still friends. He's a cool guy, but here's a funny story. So sometimes we go back to the clubs for dinners, the graduate members, so we have these black tie affairs,
mm-hmm.
and we commemorate the event with a poster. So someone will draw like a caricature of the evening ahead of time, and then all of us will sign and put our class years behind it to say we attended this event. Well, what happened was, after Matt became famous, someone from the outside stole one of his posters that he was signed on.
Got it.
And so after doing that, like the security like went through the roof, and they got cameras and alarms, and you know, but yeah, Jack Lemmon, who's no longer here, but Jack Lemmon was a member of my club.
Okay.
The King and the Paul was members of these clubs. The list is just crazy.
Well, let's get back to your other career real quickly here, because I want to ask you this: How did you not drink when you joined this club?
There were cocktail parties.
How'd you avoid alcohol in college?
Let me tell you something. These guys, and my friend just asked me last night, one of my friends from Harvard, said, how did you get through this without drinking? These guys, I'm telling you, these guys did not pressure me. Like, I told them from the beginning, guys, I don't drink alcohol. I'm a teetotaler.
Right.
I'm a basketball player, teetotaler. And they totally respected that. I mean, now, don't get it wrong. These guys were drinking, I mean, doing keg stands. Yeah. I mean, you name it. You know? Okay.
We were in college. It was like, we were not exclusive. We were in college.
It was Animal House all the way as far as drinking was concerned. Right. But they were very respectful of me. And they said, in fact, it got to the point where, like, if another member was asking me to drink, another guy would step and say, hey, leave him alone. He doesn't drink. And they just let me go. I don't know. They were very respectful.
Now, not that would have worked on you anyway. You seem like you've always had your crap together.
I don't know if we would have hung out together, though.
Well, we wouldn't have invited that club or gotten into that college.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we are neither pedigreed or cool.
Are you looking over your shoulder, though? Are you looking over your shoulder, Dr. Ian K. Smith, with his book called
Have There Been Death Threats?
Yes. Are people saying, don't write about us?
Any backlash?
Right.
Well, I think that in the next week I'll find out what. No, seriously. Well, because you know we swear we take an oath, and I feel this is I tell people this is a novel. It's not a nonfiction. So there are some things that I've moved around, but it really is based on. So in some ways I'm kind of hedging, but a lot of the history and you know, these books I'm talking about, there's a part about Nazi looted artwork. That's in the book. So there's a lot of stuff that's actually very true.
Got it.
But, you know, hopefully these guys will look at it as, hey, this is really cool. You know, one of our club mates wrote this really cool, fun, suspenseful. People are loving the book. The reviews are great. So hopefully
they
will take it in their vein.
How about movie rights?
So, knock on wood, I have a meeting today.
Cool.
With two guys from Hollywood. Who already are talking about turning it into a movie. So, knock on wood. You know, Hollywood, you never know what happens.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
Right? You know, they give you all these promises. But there's big interest in making this into a movie.
Matt Damon is the killer. I read the book, by the way.
Yeah.
I blew it up. Sorry, I read the
book. Spoiler alert.
I got the book right in my hand. I finished it last night. I couldn't stop it. Matt Damon is the killer.
Well, he's
got
to be in the movie. Absolutely has to be in the movie.
In the movie as an adult, and he killed her. Yeah, so bad. Yeah. But still buy the book, because it's really good up until that point. And you find out Matt Damon's the killer. So will you continue to do the other books? Are you going to continue? Now that you got your name on a novel that's a bestseller.
Do you have the fiction bug? Do you have the writing bug?
Yeah. Well, once again, I've always wanted to write fiction and publish fiction, so I plan on writing fiction for the rest of my life. But I also said to my publisher, listen, I can do both. I can write nonfiction and fiction. Why do you have to choose one or the other? I can't stand people say, you know, you got to be left brain or right brain. Be both brain, you know what I mean? Both sides. So yes, I will have another book out in April that will be a health book, but I will continue to write my thrillers and my crime fiction because I love that genre. Just love it.
The Ancient Nine Shredded. That's the next book. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. He's handsome there. Yeah.
That won't be till spring?
The new book will be in April. The health and fitness book will be in April. But the Ancient Nine, obviously, is out now. Oh, I got to say one more thing, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So for people listening who listen to audiobooks because they drive a lot or commute a lot.
Right.
You will love this audiobook.
Is it your voice or not?
It's not me.
Okay.
The guy who tracks this, the vocalist, his voice sounds like a train underground. I mean, it rumbles. And it's like almost like, he sounds like Morgan Freeman.
Really?
He's got that deep, heavy. Yeah, so people who are audiobook lovers, you will love. I never really talk about audiobooks, but you will love this audiobook because the voice is so captivating that it will just hold your attention.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Dr. Ian K. Smith, the book is here, The Ancient Nine, available now, number one bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list.
Where are you going to be wintering coming up here?
I'm going to be in freezing Chicago, freezing my butt off.
Okay.
Bad place to winter, but now that's where you live.
Well, next summer, come see us at the Breakers, all right? We'll be there.
I will. Hey, guys, I always love talking to you guys. It's so much fun, guys.
Thank you.
All right, love you guys.
Take care.
Dr. Ian K. Smith. He is so cool. We become friends with that guy. We can hang out with that guy. We don't drink and then drink, but we can hang out with him.
No, but it's good to be friends with a Harvard guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it sounds like he's got experience hanging out with drunks.
Yeah, that's true.
So, he's good at it.
He seems pretty tolerant.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.